You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California's giant sequoias. They are one of our state's most majestic, beautiful, and precious national treasures. People come from all over the world to see them, flocking to national parks like Yosemite. But over the past several years, California's intensifying and changing climate has caused an enormous amount of damage to sequoia groves. Whether it's wildfires turning into monstrous trees into ash, or weeks and weeks of choking smoke filling the air, or even the extremes of our dry seasons parching their roots and branches, climate change and especially wildfires are literally transforming our landscape. Those who study sequoias in hopes of protecting them for thousands of more years are very concerned about their future. As the environment changes, so is the way researchers are thinking how much more the giant trees will be able to endure and the future of national parks in California as a whole. Cap Radio environment reporter Manola Sakaida is here to share what she found on a recent trip to Yosemite right in the middle of wildfire season. Manola, thanks for making the trip.
Happy to be here.
What brought you to Yosemite?
Right. So obviously, when it comes to the most iconic of national parks, Yosemite is definitely up there. It's kind of the place you think of in California when you think of family road trips, when you just think of picturesque, unchanging environments, and obviously giant sequoias are part of that. But also part of that is the fact that wildfires all over the state are just really challenging the idea of an environment that stays the same, something that we can really depend on. And there was even a fire this year inside Yosemite, right, near the town of Wawona, which is this small community located in the park. So, you know, with all of that in mind, I kind of wanted to see how these fires are impacting the people who work there, who live there, you know, the park service, how they're managing this, and, you know, also just how wildfires are changing the face of the park. So I spent a couple nights in Yosemite while the Oak Fire was still in the process of being contained. That was pretty close by. I came to Wawona shortly after an evacuation order had just been lifted, so all the residents had returned, but it was actually going to be another day till visitors could return. So, you know, when I was there, it was a really odd day to be there. You know, it was really empty. It was really smoky because of the nearby fire. Just totally not how you'd normally see Yosemite at the end of July, which was when I was there. So, you know, I talked to shop owners and other people in the area, and the one message I just really kept hearing was that the situation made them worry about the future of the park. You know, a lot of people that live there depend on visitor revenue. So what happens when no one can come to the park anymore? That's something people were thinking about. I think there had been, you know, when I was there, I didn't really see a lot of people, obviously. I just saw a lot of, like, fire trucks and, you know, the few people that live there. And it's not just the future businesses in and around the park, but, you know, everything is changing. And a lot of research is done in Yosemite, so that's having to change too.
Right. A tremendous amount of research is done at Yosemite. How is that evolving as the landscape of Yosemite is changing?
Right. So as a whole, we've seen hundreds of thousands of acres of land burn because of these wildfires in the past few years. And a lot of that has been in the area of national parks. And, you know, there's really obvious impacts like decimated ecosystems and also just researchers having to rethink what they've thought about these areas for the longest time. You know, so many of the researchers I've talked to in the last year, not just for this story, but for other stories, have often explained to me that they've had to change their research in some way. You know, maybe they came in thinking they would study one thing and then wildfires came in. Or they were doing research in an area and then suddenly that area, you know, burned to a crisp. So they had to kind of reorient. And, you know, for some of the researchers I've been talking to, all these changes are just generally making them feel like they don't even know the field of research that they focus on as well as they once did. So one of the people I talked to in Wawona was Breezy Jackson, and that was kind of her story. She's a fire ecologist and the director of UC Merced's Yosemite and Sequoia field stations, and she lives in Wawona and often is assisting visiting researchers with their work.
What's changed for me is that I no longer trust my own understanding of fire behavior. I mean, I'm a fire ecologist. My dad was a firefighter my whole life growing up. I've been a firefighter myself. I've lived in fire country my whole life. I've been a fire lookout. I know fire. And what we're seeing now is so far outside my frame of reference and my understanding that I don't trust my own judgment and intuition. So when I look at the map of the fire, I look at the weather forecast, I can see in my mind where the fire is on the terrain that I've hiked and been in. I develop a picture in my mind of what's going to happen with that fire. And now I can't trust that picture because everything is different. It just keeps surprising me.
And Breezy is someone who's lived in Winona for over 10 years, or Yosemite, I should say. She's kind of lived in different parts of the park. So, you know, for her, this is really shocking. And like I said, this is not an unusual story from researchers.
I mean, Manola, that's just so profound. I mean, what she just said was, I no longer trust my own understanding of fire behavior as a fire ecologist. And when looking at Yosemite, the landscape, the vegetation, I mean, it's been there for centuries, even in some cases millennia. How is the natural part of Yosemite changing?
Right. So that's kind of where giant sequoias come in as a really good example of that. And I've been learning about giant sequoias over the past year just because they've come up so frequently as this example.
They're humbling to see, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got to spend a lot of time with them in person. And it was, I mean, they're gorgeous. I mean, if you haven't seen them, I hope anyone listening can go while they're there. And obviously in Yosemite, they are safe for now. And anyways, the basic story of giant sequoias for the longest time has been that they're indestructible, that they're, you know, they can live for thousands of years. They've been historically resilient to drought and bug infestation. They've also adapted to wildfires in their, you know, natural environment, so they can survive low to moderate wildfires. And that's just something that is part of their life cycle. But that's not really the case for the wildfires we're seeing now. These trees are adapted to moderate fires, but now we're seeing these high intensity, severe, catastrophic fires that are way too intense for these trees. So many have been killed off as a result in recent years. And, you know, one example is the Castle Fire in 2020, where we saw more than 10,000 giant sequoias were burned and killed. So I talked to Garrett Dickman about this. He helped me put it in perspective. He's a forest ecologist for Yosemite National Park and another researcher whose work has had to pivot and focus on wildfires. He told me that he's worked on some of these huge fires and, you know, had to account for the damage himself.
I walk through stands of giant sequoias and count the dead ones. And you just see thousands of years tick away on your fingertips. And they're gone. They're not going to be replaced in our lifetime or our children's lifetime or the lifetime after that. It's generations upon generations before that those trees could reproduce if everything goes well, and they may not.
So my question, you know, after learning this was, you know, well, have giant sequoias died by fire before? You know, how abnormal is this? Obviously, this is a really dramatic story, but, you know, a lot of people say our environment changes. You know, there has been, you know, extreme fires in our history before. But what Garrett told me that was that, you know, it is pretty abnormal what we're seeing, and we can see that looking back in history. You know, before 2020, from the research that he's seen, he told me that around 200 giant sequoias died in high severity fires over a very long period of time. And then suddenly, just in the last 2 years, we lost this, you know, massive amount.
Yeah, 10,000.
And then 2020, we lose 9 to 13% of the population, and 21, 3 to 5%. So we go from losing just over 200 trees in 2,000 years to nearly 20% of the population in 2 years. And that is a catastrophe.
So that's why I think giant sequoias are a good example of the change we're seeing here. You know, like I said, we've seen fires before, but these high severity fires are having really unprecedented consequences. And, you know, this idea of these parks lasting forever, just like the idea of giant sequoias being able to just live forever, that's really being challenged. And we're seeing, you know, all those changes and having to grapple with that reality.
Yeah, what I'm hearing is sequoias were really kind of like this anchor of being able to weather, you know, the challenges of centuries and millennia, and that's now they're being impacted. Obviously, this is probably at the forefront of Yosemite. How are parks addressing this new reality?
Right. So, you know, in recent years, the Park Service has had to do a lot of work in rethinking their ideology to adapt to all this wildfire damage. Historically, they've kind of had more of a leave it alone approach, basically, when parks were first formed, they were often formed with conservation in mind. You know, even in California, some of the first parks like Yosemite were formed kind of in part because of giant sequoias and a desire to preserve them. And the idea was just no logging, leave it entirely alone. We shouldn't interfere. It just really imagined a nature where things were left alone and humans didn't have, you know, interference in that. But that approach doesn't actually line up with the history of this environment, which a lot of researchers have been learning, Western researchers have been learning over the past couple decades. You know, basically, the short of it is that indigenous peoples have cared for this, you know, area of land for a really long time, and that care took active participation. So this is something that, you know, California officials have been recognizing on a larger level, too. That indigenous peoples conducted things like prescribed burning in these areas long before settlers arrived. And they had a lot of other methodologies, too, and just really understood what it meant to take care of this forest by actively participating in it. So now that's what parks have to do. They have to figure out what their, you know, active part in this looks like. And, you know, Garrett talked to me about that. One example he gave me was the Park Service coming out with this new framework in the last few years called RAD, R-A-D, cool acronym.
Yeah, really.
The R stands for resist, which refers to preservation, keeping some things as they are, which is kind of the historical approach. A stands for accept. So that means acknowledging that there are some parts of these changes that the park can't control, you know, like when a giant wildfire steps in. And then D stands for direct, which means controlling change whenever possible, like directing forest growth. So, you know, this ideology and carrying it out, you know, Garrett told me it's still in its early stages, but it really shows how the Park Service is just reconsidering its role and what preservation means.
The world's so different than it was 50 years ago. We really need to take a harder look at what we're doing or not doing. You know, it is action. Taking action, the same thing as taking inaction. Taking inaction is a management decision. Taking action is a management decision. Each one of them will lead to something.
And if you're following, you know, the understanding of why these wildfires have been popping up so intensely, you know, a lot of that is because of this buildup of fuel on the forest floor. So all this stuff that lower severity fires used to kind of clear out. Now they're just staying on the forest floor. Because of the lack of active management, like during the 1900s. And that just really goes to show that, you know, this idea of doing nothing is not the same as actually doing nothing. It does have an effect doing some other action.
Yeah, like nearly a century of fire suppression and not introducing good fire into landscapes like Yosemite. This is so much to take in, and it's also just, it's emotional. It's so heartbreaking, especially for people who are seeing these impacts firsthand. How did the researchers you talked to say they're dealing with all of this?
I think that there's a lot of grief, you know, and all the researchers I've spoken to, especially those that have been living in an area for a long time, it's hard not to feel, you know, sad about the impacts of these environmental disasters and really, you know, the sadness of having to really reckon with that.
It's more than just their work. It's their home. They live there in Wawona, some of them.
Exactly. And just know it's like the back of their hand. And, you know, seeing that change is just, you know, really shocking, of course. It just takes a lot to say goodbye to the idea of a place you once had and really metabolize, you know, what you have to do about its future, you know, accepting that. I mean, even in my own life, this was something that I talked about with one of the researchers. We were just talking about how when we were kids, evacuations and smoky summers were not the norm, you know, and I just really took that for granted, I guess. And now I personally am looking ahead at the rest of my life and thinking about the idea of these smoky summers just being something that I will be looking forward to. And really accepting that and dealing with that reality rather than just kind of still putting in the framework of like, oh, you know, the strange thing that's happening.
Yeah, because, like it's an anomaly, but it's not.
Exactly. It's not so strange when it happens every year now. So anyways, I talked to Breezy about it just because I was curious about how she's been adapting her own mentality and thinking around this. And she told me how she's tried to reframe it.
I've started to think of summer particularly late summer in the Sierra as winter, because it's a time where it's hard to go outside, and because it's too hot and too smoky and too crowded and too dangerous. And so it's a time to rest and hunker down and be with family and be in that winter space of waiting out the hard times.
But, you know, that doesn't mean it's time to give up. There's so much work to do. Breezy talked to me about the need for funding efforts to not just combat wildfires, but also prepare for fires in the future. You know, there's a lot of forest in Yosemite that hasn't been treated in decades, you know, 100 years, for example. And the Park Service is working to close that gap and figure that out. But that requires funding, and also, you know, more than funding, people. Like, they just need people on the ground. It's a lot of hard work.
Resources, yeah.
Exactly. There's just a huge need there, is what Breezy told me. And in her own personal life, she told me that she's not giving up. She's lived in Yosemite, you know, for the past more than a decade, been through multiple evacuations because of wildfires in her area. But she told me she's not planning on leaving.
Yosemite definitely feels like home. Like, when I walk in the forest and I smell the bear clover, which has this very pungent, unique fragrance, I just feel so at home, and I want to protect this place so much. And at this point, it feels like it would be almost impossible to leave because of that intense desire to be here and protect my home.
And I'm, you know, as I was finishing this story, I just kept thinking that, you know, this is something that, you know, everyone can hopefully carry with them, the idea that, you know, we love this place, and hopefully that is fuel for us to keep fighting to, you know, make it better.
Right. I mean, we're talking about one of the most famous national parks, but I think what Breezy just said, so many people across the state can relate to in their own backyards, because we're all impacted by wildfires in one way or another.
Exactly. And it's like this idea that things are changing before our eyes, but also the end is not going to come right in the next 50 or even 100 years. You know, as long as we're both alive, this work is going to have to continue. So that's something that we can think about, too.
Manola, thanks for taking the trip and sharing what you learned.
Thank you for having me.
That is Cap Radio environment reporter Manola Sakaida. You can read her reporting at capradio.org. Still ahead, Farm to Fork takes over Capitol Mall this weekend. We'll give you the rundown of all the experiences to enjoy and soak in. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.